Hello, everybody, and welcome to another NPC's Weekly News Roundup. It is March 12th, 2022. Tonight, we will be talking about Overwatch 2 and the lead developer on the team talking about their missteps with Overwatch as they prep for the release of the sequel. We'll also be talking about Dr. Disrespect and Twitch making up to a point and all the details that we obviously don't know about. And, of course, we'll also do a recap of Sony's State of Play that occurred on Wednesday. Again, it is March 12th, 2022. We're going to roll our intro and get things started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another NPC's Weekly News Roundup for the week of November 20th, 2020. It is Friday. It is, where's my date? It's September 18th, 2020. Here's our first story, and this is actually breaking news for all of us right now here, too. Figured this is a kind of a big one to cover, of course, with who it is. Joined via Discord by Kyle because we're in the midst of a pandemic still, and of course everything is all kinds of crazy. So this thing is a chonker. I mean,
yeah, it's a beast.
It's huge. Doing a that we had the Resident Evil stuff, that they were successful with Castlevania. Welcome to another NPC's Weekly News Roundup, and it's the news time. I am joined, of course, by Kyle via Discord. Kyle, hello.
What's up,
man? And yes, that is us live now again. Welcome, everybody. It is March 12th, 2022. I'm Travis. As you can see, the name is right there below me. And right next to me, of course, also in their bedroom, is Kyle. Hi, Kyle. Kyle, we've got some news to talk about. I think we should just hop right into it because this one, actually, funny enough, is effectively a follow-up to a story that happened to be in our intro, and that is Dr. Disrespect. So it was actually just the other day that Dr. Disrespect put up a tweet saying that he has resolved his legal dispute with Twitch. Twitch has also posted the same thing, but they have not shared any details as to what has occurred. So where we sit right now is, again, back to where we're at, just like it was a couple years ago, that we don't know what happened. We literally have no idea what's going on, do we? It literally is just like, it's like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of the Tootsie Pop? Well, how many different things have to occur with Dr. Disrespect for us to be able to find out exactly what has occurred? But even so, Dr. Disrespect, of course, has since moved over to YouTube and has no plans to move over to Twitch based on a reply to his initial tweet saying that they had resolved the issue, saying that, no, I do not plan on returning to Twitch. But what this means is that with that legal dispute resolved, again, Dr. Disrespect being a popular streamer, is that hopefully with these things resolved, it does open the door at least to be for him to be able to play with streamers who are still people he's played with previously that still reside on Twitch. Because that was one problem with the ban, is that not only is it applied to him, but anybody else who gets banned on Twitch, is that playing with someone who's been banned and having them on your stream, even if they're not actually seen but their voices are heard, though, is considered another bannable offense for that other person. So that means that Dr. Disrespect hasn't been able to play with the likes of, say, like Nick Merckx or Cloaksy in any of the games that he's been playing. And yeah, it's just another one of those interesting kind of things that happened that kept him from being able to actually play. So now, of course, with this resolved, we'll just have to see if that ends up happening again. It sounds like it might be, but we're not exactly sure. But I don't know, Kyle. I mean, this saga has been going on for basically 2 years now, almost, and still not a lot of details. But I mean, I don't know. That could very well be. Yeah, that very well could have been part of it, especially. Yeah, you don't talk about Fight Club. You don't talk about Dr. Disrespect and Twitch. No, we're all talking about it. His name was Dr. Disrespect. His name was... anyway, I feel like if I say that too many times, he'll appear like Beetlejuice. But anyway, the fact, though... they're saying they can't hear you, Kyle. Talk a little bit more for me. Hold on, it might be me.
Oh, hello.
There you are. Huh, that was weird.
Can't hear me at all?
No, I can hear you now there. Yeah, I was just looking at your I was looking at your waveform there. That's interesting. Okay, sorry about that, Kyle.
Yeah.
I did check your audio there before we started, but talk again just to be 100% sure.
Are we good?
Yeah, you're good now. I don't know. That was weird. Yeah, but thank you, Serpent Knight, for bringing that up to us there. Anyway, the TLDR, of course, is that of course, now couldn't hear Kyle. So that's going to be an interesting one there anyway. I need to set up backup recordings for all of our stuff, Kyle, just because, of course, we convert this to an actual podcast episode. But anyway, what we were saying there, of course, and what Kyle was also saying, if anybody could read lips, is, we don't know what's going on with Dr. Disrespect. TLDR.
Yeah.
I don't know what else is there really to say anymore.
There is nothing else to say because, I mean, obviously there may have been some form of contract between them that they can't actually speak about what was actually said. So
yeah, because his,
I mean, because he had a run, we may never find out.
Yeah, because according to this article here from Video Games Chronicles, they said that he apparently had a contract with them, of course, with an exclusive deal that was worth about $10 million. And so for him to have been suspended only about or permanently banned for about 3 months into that contract definitely threw everything off. So obviously there were some legal things they had to work through to be able to get to whatever point that they're at now. But Dr. Disrespect even found out, he actually said that he actually found out what it was that he had been banned for back in 2021 and that they were going to be suing, but he didn't share any details as to what it was. So I'm kind of wondering, is in the grand scheme of all of the controversy that usually happens at Twitch anyway, it seems like we go like 6 months in between controversies with Twitch, that it's not wrong. I mean, I would imagine that we're going to be hearing something I wouldn't be surprised to actually see something leak out very soon, you know, because of some type of controversy to explain why or what happened. Or Dr. Disrespect turns it into a book deal of some type, you know, and when he makes his next book, that's what he does. So,
well, and like I said, maybe if either of the parties ever mentions what, you know, occurred or, you know, what they settled upon, then it may be breach of contract that could result in another lawsuit, which both of them are going to avoid. So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's the last thing they want is probably another one. So, but in the meantime, again, is that, it's resolved as of right now, but Doc is not moving over back to, he's not moving back to Twitch. He's going to stay on YouTube. He's doing what he's doing. And things just carry on as they do. Someone actually took the time to look at the stats for his streams, what he was doing on Twitch versus what he's doing on YouTube now. And he's actually got, I apologize if I got the stat here wrong, but it was like 48% increase of viewership over what he was getting on Twitch. So something changed with the way YouTube is actually getting him out there more than what Twitch was doing, which is interesting to think about because YouTube is the everything of everything when it comes to internet videos and live streams. And Twitch is very gaming focused. So it's very interesting to see that kind of trade off. But I don't know. It's just an interesting kind of fact to bring up there before we move on.
Well, and maybe that's just it. I mean, that's their first big, you know, gaming streamer that they can say they have, that they truly have.
Well, actually, they've got Dr. Lupo, Courage JD,
they've got a
Tim
few,
the Tatman now too. Yeah, so it's they've got a pretty big amount of them, but I mean, they're definitely building up their player base though when it comes to when it comes to a lot of those higher profile ones. In the meantime, though, of course, with Dr. Disrespect there, you know, being on YouTube, everybody will still be able to watch his streams. I haven't tuned into some of his stuff for a while, but maybe that'll have to change. In the meantime, we carry on, of course, to talk about our next thing here is Dead Space Remake. EA Motive had a multi-part video. They actually released it. They just called it like one big thing, but it was like part one, part two, part three, whatever. What they talked about was a lot of the audio changes that they've made to Dead Space for the remake. And one of the things that they alluded to there, or at least hinted at, is that it looks like we're going to see Dead Space coming back at the beginning of next year. And so that's just where we're at right now. Is that, when they put up those videos, of course, it was hinted that that looks like we're going to be seeing it in 2023. I have to apologize, though. I have not yet had the chance to actually watch these videos yet talking about the audio changes. Have you had a chance to see those, Kyle?
I haven't. I don't know what kind of tweaks or, you know, I do know that they're supposed to be adding the voice acting from Dead Space 2 and 3. The same guy will be playing the voice of Isaac as mm-hmm. his like personal commentary or, you know, whatever voice acting, just to fill it in, because I know there were points in the game where Isaac should have been saying something and instead you were just the quiet, stoic, you know, hero. And it made it kind of weird. Well. So it's definitely going to smooth out some of the gameplay, and I know that's one of the changes, but beyond that, I have no idea.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the audio stuff, from what I've been able to read on right now, has really focused more on the ambiance of the environment itself, that when Isaac will take damage in the game, though, too, and that as long as it takes you, you know, to heal and that his actual breathing, his actual movements, his actual motions, all the sounds that come from that are going to really relate to his current status. And I think there's also going to be some changes there, too, if I read that right, about how his audio is going to change, especially for those first scenes of panic when you have the when you have all different creatures have all the different like jump surprises happening. There's going to be a lot of those types of tweaks, though, and a lot of changes. What are the names of the actual creatures there in? I almost said Xenomorph, but I know that's not right. What are the creatures in Dead Space?
Necromorphs.
Necromorphs. Thank you. God, they merge all that stuff together. You know, there's going to be the audio tweaks for them, though, too. And I think that with the advancements, especially, I mean, I know Dolby has been a thing for a long time, but with the advancements of like Dolby Atmos and especially having 7.1 surround sound headsets that you can have now for playing games, I think these audio, like the audio that's going to be in this remake, is going to be way more immersive and definitely make you probably want to crap your pants much faster than you did probably back in 2008. It's like, here, it's now much scarier than it was then, because really for like horror movies or these sci-fi type games and anything of that sort, is that sound is really what drives people, you know, crazy. It's because it could go silent and then you hear the tick, 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 tick of something running across the ground and oh, a big monster jumps out, you know, from the vent. So
I don't know. I'm still excited about this one. I like, similar to you, I haven't watched any of the videos, but I could see where there's plenty of room that they could make tweaks to the ambiance and, you know, just different sounds. And like you said, the Dolby Atmos, Sony 3D audio, there's a few different ones. As long as they can put out, you know, the codecs for, you know, whatever people are actually going to be using, or at least a good general codec for something that has 3D audio, you know, for those big surround sound systems that people tend to have, or, you know, the room speakers that can project that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's exciting. It's a ticking clock. I know it was supposed to be slated for end of this year. Early 2023 isn't that much of a wait. I mean, possible like 3 or 4 months longer, which, you know, what's 3-4 months? At least we're getting the, you know, warning this far in advance, not just, you know, the month before it's supposed to come out saying, oh, we're going to delay it a year.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Is that, and I will be honest with you, because you're excited for this, I'm excited for this, even though Dead Space and any type of horror games just I don't do well with them. I will still play them, though. I am excited for this, so I think they need to take all the time they need to get it ready, get it into a good spot. Seriously.
I hope so, too.
Take the time.
I really hope so.
Take the time, Motive. Get it ready to go for us. We'll be fine waiting here. We've got plenty of other games to play in the meantime.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing all game companies should have learned from Cyberpunk, is regardless, just relax, take your time, get it done in a timely, just good manner, but complete it.
Yep.
Complete it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So let's carry on here then to our next story. And this one's kind of an interesting one to hear more things about, especially it's Overwatch 2. We got our first Overwatch 2 developer update, I think, for 2022 from game director Aaron Keller, talking about what's going on with Overwatch 2. One of the big things that they announced is that there is a PvP beta that's going to be starting up next month. So you can go and sign up for that via battle.net. There is currently an alpha being played right now that's not only being played by internal teams over at Blizzard, but also by Overwatch League players, and I think a few other, like higher profile streamers and that too have access to it. But also, outside of all those different things, they actually did admit, Aaron Keller did admit, that because of all the emphasis they made on pushing to make Overwatch 2 and for how long it's taken them to even get to this point for Overwatch 2, that their focus on Overwatch and all the content that they were doing for that really fell behind. So, excuse me, here is what he says, and this is reported on by GamesRadar. A few years ago, we made the call to focus our team's development efforts almost entirely on Overwatch 2. And as development of the sequel stretched on, it meant that the live game received less focus. And GamesRadar report saying he explained this meant that the company was no longer delivering on one of its core values to support the game by updating it and delivering content on a regular basis. So, what they're doing now, though, is that they are trying to refocus, and they're trying to make sure that they really put more emphasis into what they were trying to do originally with Overwatch 1 when it comes to Overwatch 2, is that they're going to be really be making more effort on evolving and developing and growing and changing and providing that uniqueness for a live game, instead of it being something where it's, you know, wanting to be a live game, but isn't a live game, I guess, so to speak. And, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm confident that they can definitely live by this. I mean, we just recently got an event that kind of ties in with Reaper. But as it stands right now, though, I mean, we saw that too, especially with Overwatch, is that it felt like things just got stagnant really quick. We saw Overwatch 2 announced, you know, all the different things that were coming out about that, Overwatch 2 fell silent because you weren't hearing a lot about that. Jeff Kaplan left last year, and then everything else with Overwatch kind of just fell by the wayside, though. So, like, we weren't hearing a lot of stuff about the new game. We were hearing a lot of stuff about the existing one. And, I mean, even with all the ongoing stuff with Activision Blizzard right now, not only with the Microsoft acquisition still pending right now, but also, of course, the sexual harassment lawsuit and discrimination lawsuits going on in the state of California. I mean, we haven't really been in tune with a lot of what's been going on with Activision Blizzard stuff for a little while now. But even so, I think we could tell that there were still some things being held back, some things that just weren't coming out that we were expecting to see. So,
oh, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's much else to say on that, though, Kyle. Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I really wish they wouldn't have fell off, you know, the first Overwatch so much. I mean, especially now that we saw that Reaper event, it was like, are they breathing new life into the game just, you know, before Overwatch 2, or are we going to see more events? But you hear this article, and it's kind of disheartening. Like, that Reaper event might be just one of the last hurrahs before they just kind of say, okay, Overwatch 1 is going to be the same thing over and over every year like it has been. You know, I mean, prior to this, when was the last time a new event was added? Like, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
been a little while, because we've had just, like, the snow event we've had, or, like, the winter event we've had, you know, Halloween event. There's been the Summer Games event, too. Yeah, it's definitely been
granted,
very quiet.
They have changed some of the events a little, but not really a lot.
Yeah, not enough to at least really keep as much engagement as they probably were hoping to. So,
yeah,
maybe that stuff truly will change then. But yeah, in the meantime, though, let's carry on here. And I think this is something that might interest you anyway, Kyle. And apologize on this one anyway, because I do need to do more follow-up on this, too. And that is that Valve has dropped the Steam Deck Windows drivers. On Thursday is when this happened, is that Valve has now finally dropped the drivers, specifically the drivers for GPU, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth, for the Steam Deck, so that way it will work with Windows. as it stands right now, when you do get the Steam Deck, you can only run SteamOS on it, at least right out of the box. But now with these drivers, you will be able to install and run Windows 10 if you so choose. However, a couple caveats is that the three and a half millimeter audio jack doesn't work right now. The three and a half millimeter audio jack. The speakers don't work either. So you are going to have some things that work out just fine. Like you'll be able to do Bluetooth speakers, or you'll be able to do, or like a Bluetooth headset, Bluetooth speakers, or to use like a USB type C to audio adapter. So you'll be able to use the charging and display port there to actually be able to hear what's going on the Steam Deck. Now, even with that though, you're limited to Windows 10. Apparently they have not, added in the firmware to update the BIOS on the Steam Deck to include the support for TPM, which is needed for Windows 11 to work. TPM being that security module that's built into the processor. So it's probably there, just not enabled with the current release of BIOS that's out there to support Windows 10. So
you really want Windows 11 on your Steam Deck, though?
So I was watching WAN show actually yesterday. So Linus Tech Tips WAN show. And they had talked about it and said that, you know, it's like that may not be a problem for a lot of people because Windows 11 actually introduced and continued to improve on touchscreen updates that Windows 10 had improved on from what Windows 8 was. And so Windows 11 actually has more built into it for touchscreens than even Windows 10 does. But Windows 10 still has an okay touchscreen experience. So that's part of it. But... And this is where the caveat comes into it, Kyle, because, again, you have to forgive me on this, okay? So I hadn't seen they published the video, and today's been a busy day for the family. But during the WAN show, as well, they were talking about the Windows drivers as well, is that Linus has – the video, I guess, went up about 9 hours ago or so on their channel. There are some performance mix-ups when it comes to playing games on – Windows 10 on the Steam Deck versus playing against it in the Steam OS version. It's very, like, I have to go back and actually watch the video, but he definitely alluded to some very mixed bag results when it came to actually doing the testing and doing the comparison. So mileage is going to obviously vary. Now, they did make a good point, though, in the WAN show that what the AMD GPU and CPU inside this here, I mean, it's basically an APU. It's a system on a chip. It's all built into one package. What they did say is that this isn't like some sort of new built from the ground up type CPU. This is using an existing based architecture with RDNA 2 and the Zen platform. So it's not necessarily out of the ordinary for what they're doing. It's just that there might be some communication paths that just still need to be finer, like, or be finely tuned that just haven't been done so yet. And that's why there's this mixed bag result of like performance on the Steam Deck when it's running Windows.
Right.
So, yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've heard there's some still, regardless of the Windows, or if you're running it just Steam OS, there's quirks about the system, like it still cannot and will not run Halo games whatsoever. On the other hand, the Elden Ring experience, as far as PC goes, it actually runs Elden Ring better than even some high performance PCs. Some of the stutters that have been occurring on specifically the PC version, it has corrected, or actually the Steam Deck devs have corrected and put out patches for.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, and I mean, so that's one way to be able to take it with you, you know, on the go. That's pretty slick. So
yeah, and I mean, I checked my list as far as it goes. I've got like good to go, like 100 games that I can just play right away, and then probably another 200. Maybe closer to 150 that are possibly playable or somewhat playable. So I don't know. I'm really excited to get mine.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited for you to get one.
And I did manage to. They've got the ability to check if you're after quarter two. You can actually check when your ship's now. So If you were in the same pool I was, definitely check. You can see when your system's going to be available.
Nice. Very good to know. Very good to know. The last thing I will mention, though, and I think this should be pretty aware to everybody, though, anyway, about Windows on the Steam Deck, is that you cannot dual boot SteamOS and Windows on the Steam Deck. You cannot jump between the two or anything. You have to pick one or the other. Now, you can dual boot Windows and another flavor of Linux, but you cannot dual boot Windows and SteamOS, because SteamOS and the way it's partitioned on the solid state drive does not allow you to actually dual boot. So that's just another thing to be aware of, that if you want to try Windows, you can do it, but you're going to have to do a whole reflash of everything and get it reset back to its original settings and original OS to be able to get back to SteamOS in the first place. So one thing to be aware of if you want to go try it. Yeah, well, they say that support is coming here at some point in time soon, but obviously they're going to put more emphasis on SteamOS than they are on Windows. So, yeah.
Well, and who knows? Maybe that's an update that we won't see until the Steam Deck 2, because we do know that that is in development. But who knows when that we'll actually hear word of that on the wind actually coming out. So,
yeah. Oh, man. Anyway,
tech moves fast.
It does. And what else moves fast here is disappointing news. So I have not played this game yet anyway, because I don't own a PlayStation 5. But let's talk about it anyway. Is Gran Turismo 7's microtransactions are expensive. More specifically, are more expensive in the United States than Japan. So Game Rant reported on this a few days ago. Some players have actually found that the cost of credits in Gran Turismo 7 cost basically a dollar more in the United States than they do in Japan. So what it says here is that by going to the PlayStation Store, Japanese players can purchase 200 million credits for 2,200 yen, which at the time of writing works out to $18.99. By comparison, the most cost-effective credit pack on the U.S. PlayStation Store comes in at $19.99, though this will only net players 2 million credits rather than 200 million credits. So it's 100 times more expensive to buy the same amount of credits on the American side of the PlayStation Store than it is on the Japanese side of the PlayStation Store. Holy crap. That is a lot. But even outside of all of this, though, is that, we were kind of talking about this anyway last night, Kyle, is that it's the microtransactions, though, overall in this game that just seem to be way crazier than a lot of people expected them to be, is that a lot of these
super
cars
aggressive.
Ended up like talk about that a little bit, though, like, because I know you've read up on some of this.
Yeah, so like from what I understand, basically I don't know if it was for sure at the end of every match, but for sure every time when you go to buy a car, the game basically prompts you, if you don't have enough credits, if you'd like to top off your credits. Or, you know, when you go into the store, if you'd like to top off your credits to make your purchase. So, I mean, right there, they're already putting it out in front of you, trying to get you to spend to get the cars, which are, aggressively priced anyway. I mean, you're going to be spending the $2 million quite quick, honestly, just between tuning and buying the car and, if you do any paint jobs. But beyond that, the Gran Turismo, I believe it was Gran Turismo Sport that was released on PS4. If you wanted to purchase cars from the store on that one, or, bolster your garage, it was 99 cents a car. Whereas on the PlayStation Network now, because of the cost of cars, being 5 million, 10 million dollars, if you buy a fully upgraded, Nismo, whatever, you could be spending like $60 to $100 just on a car.
See, and that's ridiculous, especially because the game launched at $70, not $60, $70.
Yeah, you're already getting that aggressive $10, extra PlayStation fee for your game. So
Yeah, and that's just one of those things. I mean, we knew that like expensive games or the cost of games was going to be going up here at some point in time, and it was even announced before the PlayStation 5 and Series X launched that it was going to happen. And we've been in the world of microtransactions for years, you know, pay to play, pay to win, all those different things have been out there for so long. But it's the fact though that you know, that they only really dropped all of these microtransactions, like all the microtransaction processing, when the game launched. So when people were actually reviewing this title, that was stuff they couldn't see and they couldn't report on. So
that
is kind of a pain in the ass when it comes to, you know, it is one of those weird little deception things. Like, it goes back to UFC 4 back in, I think it was 2020 or 2019, when EA released that game. The reviewers reviewed it. Everything was good. And then as soon as that went out live to customers, it was about a couple weeks later, I think, they had an in-game advertisement for Amazon Prime's, what is it, The Boys, I think is the show. That superhero show there. You know, they had an advertisement for that in the game. And that blew everybody off. It's like, I paid $60 for this game and I have to watch an advertisement in the game. You know, it was bizarre. And now all of these other things, though, post-launch, are just now continuing to add up. I mean, like, what are we going to see next, especially with these other titles, especially as costs go up? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was kind of skimming the article, and there's this one segment in here that says, the excessive just to quote this one section, the excessive nature of Gran Turismo 7's microtransactions has already been criticized by many in the community, and for a very good reason. At the current prices, U.S. players would need to spend at least $340 in order to purchase the 10 most expensive cars in Gran Turismo 7.
Yep.
Which is around the same price as an Xbox Series S and a copy of Forza Horizon 4. Granted, Forza Horizon 4 is the previous year copy, but, I mean, 4 is pretty awesome. You get to do all the seasons and stuff. It gets kind of crazy.
And even Forza Horizon 5, if you go get that Series S and you get Game Pass, you're still going to be able to play Horizon 5. Yeah. So, yeah, that is a very interesting thing, because, like, that's an interesting one, and I know I always show my Xbox fanboy side of things when we're always talking about stuff like this anyway, but Forza Horizon 5 does have microtransactions in it, but they gift you so many cars, it's not that hard to really earn different cars either, and a lot of the cars that are in that game are not terribly expensive either, and a lot of the cars that I had in Forza Horizon 4 carried over to 5 with no cost, which was awesome.
Yeah,
so my library
was big. You received
a
gift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was like you received a bunch of gift cards from your previous game. It was, like, way cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Serpent Knight here points out on YouTube, says, sounds like the thing with the Gizmondo where the budget version forced you to watch several commercials a day. See, and that's one of those things, too, that we also see with something like the cheaper version of, like, the Amazon Kindle Fire tablet, too, where it's, like, with ads. So it's like, okay, you only pay $35 for this tablet, but you have to have ads up on your home screen before you unlock it, you know, to see and look at that too. It's like, okay, you are making a trade-off at that point. But it feels like if you invest all of this money into something, you shouldn't be getting, like it doesn't feel like it should be having to cost extra to do things that are built into the game already. And this other article here from Game Rant anyway, talking about Gran Turismo's microtransactions, you know, they make it clear. They say, as previously mentioned, reviewers were not able to see its microtransactions pricing while they tested the game, and it still managed to earn high marks across the board. So fans can likely ignore the microtransactions completely if they want and still have a good time. So that means at least that, you know, because that wasn't there and it did get high marks, it means that for those who don't want to go out and purchase all the different microtransaction like type things, any of the cars, any of the modifications, whatever, it's not going to necessarily ruin the experience. It just means it's going to take longer to get some of those cars.
Yeah, but another thing to also consider is Gran Turismo 7 is more of a difficult simulation game than, you know, Forza Horizon. I mean, you can tone Gran Turismo down a little bit, but right. I mean, it's still always going to be simulation in some form or another. Beyond that, the winnings that you earn from races aren't nearly as large as what you would win even in a Forza Motorsport game. So it makes it that much more difficult. So seeing as how $340 for the, you know, 10 most expensive cars for a game that you can only play on a console that's extremely difficult to get, where an Xbox Series S, I can actually go to Walmart right now and pick one up because I know they have one. And they've pretty much had them consistently at our Walmarts and our Target for, I'd say, since the end of January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their stock is really good.
What's the trade-off here?
Mm-hmm.
Are they just trying to cater to, you know, an elitist audience? Or, you know, maybe in the future they'll pull a Battlefront and they'll pull off the microtransactions and, you know, see the fault in their ways and say, well, this was, you know, very predatory and, you know, mm-hmm. we're not going to make money doing this on a console that, you know, isn't even out there to sell.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. And that might even be a tactic that just is overall just used in the rest of the industry anyway, is that, you know, mm-hmm. for all these other different things that are out there, it's like, well, look at the game you can get here instead and not have to worry about paying all that. You know, it's one of right. those. It's the same type of like tactics you see in politics anyway, too, where it's like you see what one politician's doing, so you use that to your own advantage to make your advertisements, make your push forward for what you're doing instead. That could be what we see here going forward, too, is that for some of these microtransaction things is just how much more the advertisement or the push changes from the competitor. So I know.
That's disgusting. That's disgusting.
I know, but that's just how things end up working in the industry, unfortunately. That's just kind of what we're probably expecting to see now. But I get it. I do get it. But even so with that, of course, is like I said there at the end, is that Gran Turismo 7, it does cost $70, but according to all the reviewers, though, is that it's still a fun game to play if you really like those more like near real life precision driving simulator games. So, you know, take that as you will there. And if you want to go spend the money through the microtransaction system, go do it. If you don't, it looks like you're still going to have a good time. So, yeah. But let's carry on here to our last story and talk about the Sony State of Play, kind of going through this recap here, thanks to Tom's guide. So we got ourselves quite a few details in the State of Play, not only some new game announcements, but also some additional details on things that were already known about, too. And one of them, I swear to God, I got to focus on this one first because it just drives me absolutely batty, Exoprimal, I think is what it is. Yeah, Exoprimal.
Oh, God.
This game just absolutely drives me completely batty, and I don't know why it does so much. I got to bring the trailer up for this because, like...
The Dino Crisis, maybe... spiritual successor. I don't know what this is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused. I'll say that much. I'm just confused by the whole trailer, because when it starts out, you see the girl with the red hair, she's in this chopper, you know, you're thinking, oh, this is definitely going to be Dino Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, then it just kind of deteriorates from there.
Well, I think one thing that bothers me is that it's like, I don't really remember a lot from Dino Crisis as a kid. But, like, I see this and I see, like, a Capcom game. But I think, like, what really bothers me more than anything is that it's like, here's your weather report today. You know, today it's going to be a high of 75 and a low of 56. Oh, and we've got a vortex that's going to throw up dinosaurs all over the place like you're seeing here right now. It's just, it's so bizarre to me. It feels like what I'm seeing here is more like an arcade game. Like I'd be playing something like Time Crisis, where I actually have the gun con and I'm working to shoot whoever these people are, or like whatever these animals and dinosaurs, all these different things are. That's just what I expect to do.
I'm for this situation.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. I'm like looking at the trailer as you got it going. I know it's a couple seconds behind on my end, and I'm just like, Jesus, what am I watching again? I'm confused. I'm confused as much as the trailer's confused.
Yeah. Like I just don't understand exactly what we're expecting to see here, though. Like I just don't know. I have to get away from
yeah.
that because that was just so freaking crazy.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Capcom does make good games. I mean, they've made bad games, but is this? I don't think this is the first time they've done something with exosuits before. So maybe they can do it right. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. So we got
dinosaurs.
Yeah, so we got the dinosaur stuff, like, with Exo Primal. We've got Ghostwire Tokyo details that were also talked about as well. Game is actually going to be out on March 25th. So there was a new trailer that showed off more that's going to be happening in the game, but we've only got a couple weeks until that game is out, so just be ready there, too.
Less than two, officially.
No kidding. That one got pushed out by, what, 6 months just this last year?
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, we got Final Fantasy Origins that was also talked about too. Kyle, stop me if there's anything else that you really want to talk about here specifically too. The one I'm actually excited to try out as well is Gundam Evolution, and Gundam Evolution that'll be the one that'll let you pick like the different Gundams from different series, and it's basically just it's a team shooter. So
it does look like from the 0068 to 0079. Generation. So I think we are going to be relegated to like Zaku's and like the original Gundam, Z Gundam. But I mean, there is still quite a bit of mobile suits that it looks like you'll have variety to pick from. And you might be able to actually kit out potentially.
Yeah, and I think some of that kit out type stuff comes from this mobile, I almost said mobile suit game. There's this mobile Gundam game that lets you kind of like use like the whole Gunpla method to be able to actually like kind of put different Gundams together in a way you'd want them to do by using like base Gundam kits, and it looks like that some of that might actually be carrying over to this game too. But yeah, this one actually does look fun, and they're getting ready to start up a network test for it at the end of in Japan sometime very soon though. But it is, I mean, it's a team shooter for Gundam, so works for me.
It'll be cool. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be cool.
I think so, too. So there's that. And then let's see. Let's go through the rest of the list here. I didn't actually get the chance to watch this.
Cowabunga Collection.
Yeah. So what's this one then, Kyle?
Oh, yeah. So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Of course, Konami, of all people, showed up. And they didn't even have a pachinko machine with them. They were actually showing off a game. And it is 13 games, classic Turtles games to be precise. It sounds like we're going to get all of them from the original NES. The Turtles in Time arcade game. I believe a couple of them from the Super NES. One or two of them from the Genesis. I know Hyperstone Heist for sure is on there. All of them from the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. So quite the collection. And actually, I want to say the Super NES ones, the arcade version, Hyperstone Heist, I believe five in total, maybe six, that are going to actually have online play as well. So you'll be able to hop online with your friends and squad up with three other turtles and I don't know.
No, did they say that
throw some foot soldiers at the screen?
Now, they say if this is specifically for just PlayStation, or is this going to come out to all the other consoles, though, too?
No. At the event, they did show it as just PlayStation 4 and 5. However, it is launching on PS4, 5, I want to say Xbox One series systems, and PC and Switch.
Yep. Yeah, I just went to their official website here. So yeah, PlayStation 5, 4, Xbox Series line, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC via Steam.
Holy cow, that's a lot of consoles
for $40. Yeah, It really is, especially for 40
bucks, 13 titles.
Yeah. And a lot of those titles, especially because of the multiplayer part, like that you'll be able, you're not limited. You don't have to go buy a PlayStation to actually play with people now. It's like, it's going to be everywhere, which means you're talking about cross-platform at least, which is cool. So very awesome indeed for sure to see that. Let's see here. So talking about some of the other new stuff, though, too. We got a new JoJo's Bizarre Adventure game coming out called All-Star Battle. 50 characters are going to be in this one, and it's just another battle game, another battle royale, or not battle royale, but another fighter game there. So,
speaking of fighters, there was also a Godzilla-style game that's basically kaiju battling called Giga Bash. That one's going to be in the same vein as almost what it looked like as the Godzilla Destroy All Monsters on GameCube.
Oh, is it really? I'm going to bring that up right now. Let's take a look at this one. Let's see what this one looks like here. So, okay. All right. Oh, yep. This definitely has that. Yeah, this definitely has that that vibe for sure. Ooh. Yeah, I like this one. Okay. Might have to consider this one, potentially. I wonder how that's going to be handled. But is this... I wonder if this is going to be a PlayStation exclusive one then, too.
That one I'm not certain on. Once again, I believe at the event, all of their trailers, they just show it as PS4 and 5, specifically for the event.
Okay.
But... Definitely, I imagine if nothing else, this one will probably be on either Steam or Epic Games Store. Another one I'm really excited about, however, is the Trek to Yomi. That one's going to be a black and white side scroller samurai game that's kind of set in like a almost Kurosawa-esque film style. It looks really cool, though.
I wonder if just like with the popularity of Ghost of Tsushima, that this was just one of those things that's like, we could actually approach this in one way and, you know, be able to honor at least the heritage and traditions from feudal Japan and be able to, you know, bring this stuff up there. But some of the gore, like in the trailer here, kind of takes me back more to like some of like the stuff from Tenchu. You know, yeah. I kind of see some of that in it, at least, even with some of the animations. I feel like I'm looking at almost like a side-scrolling Tenchu game. In not all the way, but it, like, so to speak.
But oh, no, I totally get it. Especially going back to, you know, Tenchu, what was the first one? Deadly Shadows and, you know, Tenchu 2 on the PlayStation.
Sounds right.
The very muted colors and stuff and... You know, they just had the landscape and stuff. For as limited as it was, it was very stylized. And, yeah, it definitely reminds me of those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely looks really... I really like the look of that. But I just want a new Tenchu game. That's all. I just miss Wrath of Heaven. That was such a fun game to play. But let's see. So carrying on here, of course, it looks like we're going to be having... an expansion for Returnal as well, because Sony did just recently, this last year, purchase Housemarque, company that made Returnal, one of the launch titles for the PlayStation 5. They're going to be doing an expansion for Returnal called Ascension, and it will be coming out actually here very soon, and adds in campaign, co-op, and a survival mode. So that's also coming down the line too, so be on the lookout for that if you did like the Returnal game. And then, of course, a couple things coming from Square Enix as well. Is that we've got the Diofield Chronicle. It is a strategy RPG game. It has one of those, not necessarily like over the, I don't want to describe it. It kind of gives more of a vibe, like looking more like an RTS game than anything from like the actual perspective of it.
This one definitely is in the vein of like Final Fantasy Tactics, or if anyone's played it recently, since it just came out, Triangle Strategy. However, this one, it definitely plays with more of that like 2.5D aspect, and the characters, it's like they're on watercolor backgrounds, and you know, just like the classic art style, but all the character models are more modernized, like visually. And they just have more action to them, I guess, it feels like. as far as like storyboard art and everything, it looks almost exactly the same as what you would see on a Final Fantasy Tactics. So, and that being said, I honestly, when the trailer first started, I thought I was watching a trailer for a remake of War of the Lions.
Hmm. Okay, I can see that here for sure. Okay. Yeah, this doesn't actually look too bad, but I mean, really, there isn't a lot that, you know, that comes out of Square Enix that, like, looks terrible or anything. But I really do like the perspective. I like the idea of going back to some of those old watercolor type character sketches in that, too, especially that you saw from, like, older Final Fantasy games. So this does look really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it looks cool. It looks like they may have also, aside from, you know, borrowing from Tactics, maybe also borrowed some from, like, Valkyria Chronicles and maybe the XCOM series as far as, like, movement and the way combat works.
Mm-hmm.
So, could be really interesting. I'm kind of excited for it.
Yeah, same. I actually do like the look of it, though, don't get me wrong. And then one of the bigger announcements here that I know drove our friend Ben absolutely crazy on was Valkyrie Elysium. And this is definitely one that he was all excited for. Because Valkyrie Elysium has to be a Valkyrie Elysium is a sequel to, it's not, what you have to explain it, Kyle. You probably
Valkyrie
know this better.
Profile.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me a little bit about this series. This is one I'm not necessarily familiar with.
I'm not actually familiar with the Valkyrie Profile series whatsoever, to be honest. That's one I haven't played.
Okay.
Well, I know it is an older PS1 series, but beyond that, you got me.
Well, one of the things, especially with the animation style and the art style that I see here, is this, like, you have to forgive me on this, especially if they took it from, you know, a previous Square Enix title or anything, though, too, is that it kind of looks a little bit like they took their style, that Square Enix took, you know, what their style is, but also took some things from Genshin Impact, though, too. Is that wrong to say, or?
No, I kind of get that feel as well, maybe.
It does look really nice,
though. To be honest, especially, you know, the way the action and the attacks activate, you know, the visuals for the attacks. I don't know. It does have a very Genshin Impact look to it.
Mm-hmm. It does look really nice, though. Don't get me wrong. I think that is actually a really good looking game, though, for sure. So,
yeah.
But I know there were a few other little things talked about at the State of Play, though. But if you want to go check out that full recap, of course, go over to PlayStation's YouTube channel and go check out that full stream. I think it's only about maybe a half hour to an hour long. So,
yeah, I think it's only about 24 minutes, to be honest.
Oh, really? That's it? It seemed like it was longer.
Yeah,
but maybe
it's pretty short.
Maybe I was seeing more of like the, like, you know, like Giant Bomb talks over the State of Play, and theirs usually goes on for like an hour or so, too. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it was a quick one. They don't really have much fluff in this one. It was trailer, talk, trailer type. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that quick.
Especially with a lot of the thought that people were going to see more details on PlayStation VR 2 or even more details on whatever Project Spartacus is actually going to be. So,
yeah,
one of those interesting ones. But in the meantime,
and I think when we hear about them, it might be at the same State of Play, and it's going to be a long one. Expect like a, you know, 45 minute to an hour long one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would expect probably if anything we see next is Microsoft today. Looks like they're prepping for an E3 style event of their own here during June. So maybe Sony is going to be waiting till then to really kind of hit everybody hard with all of these other big things, you know. So I guess we just got to be on lookout for that announcement, though, too. But in the meantime, that is it for the news this week. We have talked about everything that we think we can. There's probably stuff we're missing, but we've talked to you about the stories that we care about, of course, for this week, though. So with all that, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us for this week's weekly news roundup. Of course, if you're watching us here on YouTube, be sure to hit that subscribe button and notification bell so you know when we go live with our next news live stream. Of course, be sure to follow our podcast as well, anchor.fm/the-NPCs-podcast. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform of choice, and make sure to go through our back catalog. We talk about a whole bunch of different things. Our NPCs discussed episodes, our What Are You Playing's, our old topic episodes, all the fun stuff that we've done over the last almost 3 years of doing all of the stuff that we've been doing so far. With that, of course, though, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to this week's news. We will catch you all next week.
Bye-bye.